Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey and as always I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutforth.
Good evening.
Hi, howdy.
This week we're talking about evanescent embryos and battling babies, but first, Patreon. We want to thank all of our patrons for voting for this episode and also, you know, just for generally being patrons because they submitted this episode as well. And if you join our Patreon over at patreon.com/SciGuys, you can get a number of very cool things like bonus episodes, an entire new podcast called Sci Guys After Dark, which is released monthly, along with a few other perks as well. And a question for everyone. If you are watching on YouTube, head down to the comments. If you're not watching on YouTube, you're listening elsewhere, head to YouTube and get to the comments. The question is, do you have any siblings? Do you have any siblings?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Let's move on.
We actually got to answer it this week.
Yeah.
We were allowed.
Yeah. Because we changed the format a little bit. The intro. Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
So now we're allowed to answer.
As I said, though, this month our patrons voted for vanishing twin syndrome, which is a condition that sounds a lot more mystical than it actually is.
Is it where one sibling's a magician and they make the other one vanish?
Very rare.
Did you... That's the Prestige.
It is.
Are we talking about the Prestige? Today?
No. Vanishing Twin Syndrome is very different. Okay. Christopher Nolan didn't direct this one.
Ah.
And while I said it's not as mystical as it sounds, it is very, very interesting. So what do you think Vanishing Twin Syndrome is?
Is it where there's something where like one baby absorbs the other baby and then that baby sort of lives inside the now grown up baby?
Eating a baby. No. Yeah, that is one way for it to happen. We'll get into it a little bit later. I think first we should probably talk about twins. Twins are?
Which type?
Wow. There's two types. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, tell me. What are the two types?
There's fraternal, which I forgot which one that is, and there's...
It's going to become very obvious when you remember the second one.
It's identical, is it? Okay, I wasn't sure if there was like a fancy name for it.
You know, identical and fraternal twins.
So identical is usually one, is it one egg that's split into two eggs?
Yeah, so one zygote, one fertilized egg,
yeah.
Then splits into two zygotes. Yeah, yeah. two identical.
And so they come out looking identical. They come out looking the same. Whereas fraternal is when two eggs are released and they're both fertilized, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, spot on. Good. Yeah, so there are some sort of quirks with this. So as you said, identical twins are monozygotic twins, which means...
As you said, Jemp.
That's exactly what I said, word for word. Please cite your source.
So as you said, the identical egg splits into two and making two identical twin babies. Now, some places that you read this will say that those twins are always the same sex.
No.
Really?
Wait, identical
twins.
Yeah, surely they must.
Are they always the same sex?
Oh no, because the sperm carries a Y, and the Y can go into one but not the other.
No.
Is that not how it works?
Are there environmental factors which then later determine sex?
There are some chances of genetic abnormalities which would result in a different sex assigned at
birth. Oh, this is like an intersex thing.
Wow.
Yeah, so XO. Like if there's a problem that occurs with the not necessarily the sperm not going into the egg, but if there's a problem that occurs with the Y chromosome and its activation, could have problems there. The SRY gene, there could be problems there. Like it's not all in your genetics, obviously. There are external factors in there, and each fertilized egg could have slight changes which happen very early, which result in a different apparent sex. Intersex, this is incredibly uncommon.
Yeah,
like most people will not, if you say they're always the same sex, you'll be right in enough cases that people will not, like, I'm pretty sure it said they were always the same sex
generally true
on the NHS website. I think that's what it said. Like,
yeah,
generally it's true.
Yeah,
but there are some like sort of fringe cases where one child is intersex and the other one isn't.
Will they also then be non-identical twins?
I mean, identical twins aren't identical, though.
Okay.
You know, in that, so genetically they're identical.
Yeah.
When they're born, but there are so many environmental factors, right?
You guys ever come across mirror twins?
No.
So when I was growing up, I had some friends, Sophie and Charlotte, and they were mirror twins.
What's that?
It means that if you look at them in the mirror, they look like each other.
That's weird.
Ew.
It's really interesting.
It's really weird.
In what ways?
So they were identical twins,
right.
But they were identical twins that, I don't know the specifics, but basically the specifics ended up that they were almost like mirror image twins. They were like the left side of one. I wouldn't be able to give you specifics. I'd be postulating.
Right.
But basically, if you looked in the mirror, once you got to know them and you can actually tell them apart, if you looked in the mirror, they looked like the other one.
Oh, that's so
weirdly
weird.
It was slightly more on one of them than the other. So
right.
On one of them, they looked exactly like the other one did in the mirror.
Yeah.
And the other one looked kind of like the other one did in the mirror.
Weird.
So I just want to be totally clear that I don't fully trust the website that I am getting this from. It is twins.org.au. Mm-hmm. I don't know how reputable that is.
don't trust them.
But it says mirror image is a type of identical twinning. It can happen in any type of identical twins. When the split occurs late, more than a week after conception, the twins can develop reverse asymmetric features. This term is not really a type of twin, just a way to describe physical features. That's interesting. So twins that split later than this can result in conjoined twins. So it seems that what happens is that if the split happens quite a while afterwards, they're identical, but the mirror image of each other just based on the way that sort of bodies develop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. That's very cool.
It's really cool.
So here's some features that just off of this website, and this will be linked in the description as well. The major characteristics of mirrored image twins that they usually have is that they usually have opposite features such as hair whorls, left and right handedness, the same eye condition in opposite eyes, opposite teeth eruption. Oh wow. Some mirror image twins cross their legs opposite to each other, and in extreme cases twins can even have reversed organs. That's interesting. That's very interesting.
So
do you know what I'll do? I'll double check this before this episode goes out, just to make sure that this is all solid. If I don't double check it, then tell me that I'm wrong in the comments, please.
Yeah.
But that's really interesting. Wow, cool.
Yeah,
that is it. I've never heard of that before.
No, I hadn't either. It's one of those things that it doesn't shake my worldview. You know, it makes complete sense, and I had all the pieces there to understand that this is probably a thing. I just had never considered it.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite kinds of things to learn, you know? Mm. Where you're like, "Oh wow, I could have figured this one out." And that's really cool. That's nice. Yeah. So, identical twins, as I've said, one egg splits into two after fertilization.
And that was the issue with my logic.
Yeah.
Because I said it's like two sperms going into the split egg, but
yeah.
It's fertilized and then it splits.
Yeah, that's why they're identical, because the two sperm aren't going to be identical.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And two sperm going into different eggs
is
would result in fraternal twins.
Yes.
In this case, as we said, they're almost always the same sex, but 70% of identical twins might end up sharing a single placenta, which is really cool. You know, think?
Yeah.
So like most of them end up sharing a placenta. I don't think they tend to share an amniotic sac.
Weird.
Yeah. And we don't know what causes identical twins. Like we don't have ideas of risk factors or anything. Mm. I say risk factors as though an identical twin is a bad thing. But they don't run in families. And everyone has the same chance of having an identical twin, which is about 1 in 250.
They don't. I was shocked that there was a genetic element and it did run in families. That's so interesting.
So twins can run in families.
Right.
Identical twins don't.
Okay.
And the reasoning that I have hypothesized for this, I mean, I didn't bother to look into it because it wasn't super relevant to today's episode. The reason I thought this might be the case is that when you look at non-identical twins, it makes sense as to why that would run in families. But identical twins seems to be an issue just with the splitting of the egg. The dividing of the sort of fertilized egg cell, right?
Yeah.
Like there's something that goes wrong there, and that results in the splitting going wrong, and it's splitting into two different individual sort of organisms.
Absolutely, but you could hypothesize of some mutation in certain genomes that makes that splitting going quote wrong slightly more likely.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's not the case.
Yeah, no, that's not the case.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, it happens very early as well. So it makes sense. I mean, those are very, very key very, very key genes. And you could imagine that mutations in those genes could just result in a pregnancy not being viable.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So like, because it's genes to do with... It's one of those things where there needs to be something going wrong just enough for them to both survive, but not so much, right?
Yeah, it breaks everything.
Yeah, exactly, right? And that's a really fine line to walk, genetically speaking.
So are identical twins more likely to miscarry then?
No. That is not at all what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying that, like, clearly there is an issue. Clearly there is something that happens sort of early in the pregnancy that results in the sort of fertilized egg splitting. Mm. We don't really know necessarily what that is. Mm. All I'm saying is that for mutations that happen at that point in pregnancy, I think that the case is such that, you know, if there's too much of a mutation that happens very, very early, that could result in just the pregnancy being non-viable. So that's identical twins. As I said, everyone has the same chance, 1 in 250. But non-identical twins, those are two separate eggs that are fertilized and then implanted into the womb. So they're fertilized by different sperm, obviously, and they're just two eggs that are probably released at the same time. And those two identical twins are no more alike than any other two siblings. If you think about it, it's just they just shared the womb at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are some factors that increase the likelihood of non-identical twins. So in some ethnic groups, like Nigerians, there is a high rate, and it's much lower among Japanese people. And if you're pregnant and over 35, you're much more likely to have non-identical twins because you're more likely to release more than one egg during ovulation.
Ah. Wow. Any reason for that?
When
just you are.
Well, this is what they call advanced maternal age, which I hate because 35 just feels like too young to say
like
advanced.
You're old.
No, yeah. It's I mean, I know there's before someone's in the comments saying, "Oh, but this data and that data." Yeah, I know. It seems an odd way to phrase that. It seems like something, and I'm not saying I know this for a fact, it seems like something that was come up with by a man.
Yeah, it sure
to describe. It sure does. Yeah. So
it's a little insensitive.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's a little insensitive.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at that.
So if you're pregnant over 35, you're more likely to have, generally as you age, those processes kind of change, I guess, not change, but they're like, you know, the ability of your body to do all of those processes entirely correctly can kind of change. I mean, that, you know, at some point you go through menopause and your body changes, like, you know, hormonally quite a lot. You stop going through all that stuff. And there's sort of, I think, like, it's that sort of thing that, like, having a decrease in fertility as you age, you know. There's these different factors. It's kind of just aging, really. Aging affects multiple systems in your body.
It could also potentially be an advantage, though, if you are reaching the point at which you won't be able to have any more children, and this pregnancy is like the one that you're going to be able to have. You can make two.
I think you're spot on, actually. I think I've read that somewhere. Yeah, I think that's an idea for that.
And that also might mitigate against the risk factors, or potentially on an evolutionary basis. Get rid of some of the risk factors of having babies older, because then you have twice the chance that you have a viable baby or a baby that's not born with something that you don't quote want it to have.
Yeah, I mean, that makes that makes sense. It's a very good idea.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I'll do a study.
Should write it down.
And also, non-identical twins can run in the mother's side of the family, probably because of an inherited tendency to release more than one egg, it says there.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. So if on sort of your mother's side there are a lot of identical twins, there's probably something that is inherited, something probably a genetic that results in more chance of just releasing two eggs at once.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense. Whereas identical twins, there's not that sort of chance. It's really weird. It's really interesting. It's strange that, like, okay, what I find interesting is that we call twins twins, despite the fact that there are different ways of becoming twins, and they're both very, very different.
Yeah. And also, non-identical twins are just siblings born at the same time.
Exactly.
They're not twins.
And it does result in a different experience growing up, obviously, But
vastly different.
Culturally twins.
Yeah, exactly. But our culture, because there's not really been a surefire way of determining whether twins are monozygotic or dizygotic, up until the point where we're able to actually look at.
Really?
Yeah, well, like, if you think about it, you can't necessarily tell if two babies are genetically identical until you're able to test that sort of thing. I mean, you could wait till they're growing up and be like, oh, they look similar, or oh, they're different sexes. So, like,
or you could do a genetic test at birth.
Yeah, but I'm saying before
can you
genetic
get,
tests.
Yeah, can you get cells from a developing? You can get cells from a developing fetus whilst it's in the womb. I think.
If you wanted to. Okay. When I'm saying, when you're asked that question,
in the standardized pregnancy pipeline, there's not a way of knowing.
What I mean is that up until like a certain point in history, there was no way of knowing.
Long after we'd come up with the term twins
and all of that, they were fundamentally the same thing. But now we look at it, and actually, there's two different ways of becoming twins, and one of them is way less interesting than the other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but
it's such an interesting thing about like just lived life experience of, that is shared between both types of twins, of like just having a person who's this looks like, you don't necessarily know what you look like, but they are the same rough size as you. They're probably in the same like bed as you when you're growing up. You can keep each other warm. Like, it's a really interesting thing. That's like a totally different life to being a baby on your own, where you are ultimately at points in your day left on your own and secluded from other people. Well, that might not happen if you're twins.
You have a friend for life, essentially.
It's lovely.
You're related to. There's not necessarily an inherent power dynamic as there is in almost every other relationship, because
I don't know, man. You never seen the cramped twins?
Yeah, but they're not identical twins.
Yeah.
But that's my point. Where there's not necessarily an inherent power dynamic in terms of with other siblings. Yeah. There's age, and age results in a hierarchy, which results in that power dynamic. And not necessarily a bad power dynamic. You know, an older sibling can be a caring figure, which is really good. Yeah. But in terms of twins, you are sort of almost necessarily on a level playing field.
Yeah,
which is incredibly interesting.
Same age, same experiences at the same time,
and you generally look the same as well.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
which, you know, when twins grow up and you get to the point where there's one good looking twin and one twin that's slightly less good looking.
Yeah, that's
that to me seems horrifying.
Yeah,
because like the worst. Like, okay, sometimes I can think about, okay, what would I look like at my best? I would hate to have someone that is just what I could look like at my best, like genetically speaking, like. I know the only difference between us is the fact that I'm not doing what you're doing. Oh gosh, that's horrifying.
They got all the good genes.
Yeah, but I feel you could also just project all of the things you don't like onto your twin, so that your twin always looks better to you anyway, even if there's no objective difference between you.
Mm-hmm. Fair. Yeah,
they could do that back to you without you knowing.
Yeah.
Oh.
You both think you're the ugly twin.
Yeah.
So those are twins. Vanishing twin syndrome is understandably when a twin vanishes. And Luke, you said it's when a twin is absorbed, but that's not necessarily always the case. There are other things that can happen to the twin. Ultimately, the kind of actual definition of vanishing twin syndrome is a phenomenon wherein a multi-fetus pregnancy becomes a single fetus pregnancy, or I suppose just a pregnancy with fewer fetuses if you've got, you know, triplets down to doublets. Twins.
Doublets.
Doublets is an objectively better name than twins.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, doublets should be what it's called when they're not identical.
Oh my god, yes.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Twins and doublets.
Twins and doublets.
Ooh, what will it be? We'll find out when it grows up. Is it a twin or a doublet?
Well, what would you call identical triplets?
Oh my god, what if there's okay, so it depends, right? Identical triplets are just triplets. If they're non-identical and it's a doublet and another one, then that's just a doublet.
That's
and
a triplet.
A doublet and a friend.
No, oh, wait.
Because
oh,
they're not, because triplets are identical.
This is okay. Identical. Yeah.
We are getting off track here. I'm just going to bring us back in.
Twins and third wheel. you're uninvited. Why are you here?
So, fair. How common do you think vanishing twin syndrome is?
I would say deceptively common. More common than one would expect.
I was going to say really, really uncommon.
Well, that is, yes. I suppose it's somewhere between.
We've covered the range of possibilities there, other than if it happens every time, or if it never happens,
or if it's exactly as common as one would expect.
Okay, yeah,
I guess.
So, how common? Give me a percentage number on. How about this? On twin pregnancies, let's say.
On twin pregnancies.
Yeah, so on pregnancies with twins.
Even if, so are you including in that?
No, as in pregnancies that start off as being twins.
So start off any pregnancy where there are two potential children.
Two children that are seen, so seen at sort of, I think, ultrasound would be.
Diagnosed
that's,
with two children.
That's kind of the point I'm making, is that I think that you could, it's possible that you get to ultrasound and you've already lost one, and that would be a vanishing twin syndrome, but they're so small that you never knew.
But you wouldn't, it's unmeasurable, essentially, right?
Yeah, doesn't mean it's not happening.
Okay, cool. Okay.
Well, I like
fallen
to
fallen soldiers.
Okay, fine. Assume, okay, how common do you think it is based on the caveat that we need to be able to bloody measure it, Luke?
Okay, well then exactly as common as people would think if they were informed on the answer already.
Thank you. Give me a number, please.
I would say Jesus of Christ. Twins.
Yes.
5%.
Oh wow.
Ooh, yeah. I was going to say about 1%.
Oh wow, that's interesting. 36%.
What? Mm-hmm. Oh my god. So twins are like super high for miscarriage. Is that a type of miscarriage?
No, not miscarriage.
Where are they going?
So, well, we'll find out in a sec. 50% of...
Why is it not a miscarriage? You don't get the baby, ultimately.
You still get a baby.
Yeah, but you don't get two.
Yeah, but it's not a miscarriage, necessarily. Well, look, we'll... Let's just put a pin in it.
Okay.
We'll get to it in a sec.
Yeah.
Okay? Trust me, it's fine. Don't worry.
Okay.
So 50% of pregnancies with three or more gestational sacs. Now, a gestational sac, I looked this up.
Having a baby so gross.
What do you think a gestational sac is?
Is it like the clump of cells before it has formed, like become a form?
As far as I'm aware, a gestational sac is just that sort of first, it's the first sign of pregnancy that can be seen on an ultrasound from about 4.5 to 5 weeks. It's that kind of little space where you're going to gestate. That's it.
Every time I look at an ultrasound, I do not know what I'm looking at.
Really?
Yeah.
If it's a baby?
Sometimes I can see the shape of the head and like...
Oh, you mean this for real? You look at an ultrasound, you don't know what you're looking at.
I'm like, cool.
Hold on. Are you...
What?
Really?
If it's like a fully formed baby, yeah. I'm like, okay, I can see the shape of the baby.
All I'm saying is most of the ultrasounds you'll have seen will have been of mostly formed babies.
A lot of people announce their pregnancies with pictures of ultrasounds, and I'm like, that's just black and white blobs.
You can't see a...
That's a side baby. Side-on baby. It's like a...
Oh, kind of there, but it doesn't... Yeah.
It's almost like a cross-section of
the
baby.
See some little flippers.
Yeah.
See the shape of a head.
I mean, I don't know.
Little kidney bean.
But that is a very high definition ultrasound.
That says early pregnancy ultrasound.
It's high definition.
Okay. No, I mean,
what you're telling us is you don't know what you're looking at because you've been looking at poor quality pictures.
Probably, I will say a lot of the ultrasounds that people post, the first ones they post,
that's probably what I'm looking at. Yeah.
I mean, when I got an ultrasound, I got to look at my own bladder, and I'll tell you, I've got a good looking bladder.
Is there a baby in it?
No.
Well, it might be because Jamp wouldn't know the difference between an ultrasound of a bladder and a baby.
You could show me that and I'd be like, oh.
Oh, when are you due?
Oh, so cute.
Well, they did it before and after I peed. So I got to see my bladder when it was full, pregnant with urine.
Like, vanishing wee syndrome.
We'll have it.
Where did it go?
Yeah, sometimes during recording these episodes, I realize, wow, people that think we are too silly really, really have a point.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah, we're very silly. You know, that's the point.
Silly is too relative. Silly. But no. And it's, you know, if you're boring, then it's relative to how boring you are.
To a silly person, we're very serious.
Yeah. So, as I said, 50% of pregnancies with three or more gestational sacs, that could result in three or more
babies.
That 50% of them result in sort of a sort of vanishing fetus, or have a vanishing fetus. You know. 36% of twin pregnancies and 20-30% of pregnancies achieved through some sort of aided reproduction or fertility treatment. Why do you think that is?
So it's less common.
So it's less common in like IVF and stuff.
Yeah. So it's in IVF. It is very common.
Oh, it's very common.
It's 20-30%. That's still, it's less common than in a pregnancy with three potential because a gestational sac doesn't necessarily mean a fetus is going to grow, right? Yeah. But with three or more, and then with two, it's 36% of twin pregnancies. But why do you think so many IVF? Because okay, you're looking at it based on twins, right?
Yeah.
This isn't just 30% this is all pregnancies.
Of all IVF, it will vanish.
So it's 20-30% of all pregnancies that are achieved through assistive reproductive techniques.
Yes. So is it because they haven't implanted onto the lining?
I think you're okay. So the reason that it's that is because they implant the multiple fetuses so often.
Yeah.
And oh, so you have a higher chance.
You have a higher chance.
Right.
Because
okay.
Like, think about it. The 20-30% of it's lower than twins, right?
Yeah. But yeah.
That's all of all IVF. Not all IVF results in twins.
No.
You know?
Yeah. Usually you're implanting more than two with IVF as well.
Yeah. I don't know the exact specifics on IVF or other reproductive techniques, but the point is that they basically throw a bunch of eggs at the wall, see what sticks.
Literally.
Oh yeah. God, yeah. Wow. Wow. Yeah, so You said that it would result in miscarriage, which...
So miscarriage will have a definition of being after a certain time.
A loss of the pregnancy during the first 23 weeks. Now, the chances of survival of the other twin are really, really good if it occurs during the first trimester of pregnancy. So in the
split.
Yeah, so so if the vanishing.
Oh, okay.
So the other twin will be fine.
Yeah.
More often than not, if it's in the first trimester. So if it's early in pregnancy and the other twin is disappears.
Yeah.
Then the remaining twin probably going to be fine.
Okay.
Right? So again, you wouldn't really call it a miscarriage because you're not really losing the pregnancy. Right?
It's just disappeared.
It's just changing from a multi-fetus pregnancy to it could be this is where the definition of the term miscarriage becomes a bit murky. Like there are some instances of vanishing twins wherein which I would consider it a miscarriage.
Yeah.
But other ones I wouldn't, because it's not really an issue in sort of carrying, it's just been reabsorbed and you still have a viable twin, a viable child.
Yeah, sure. But that's quite a clinical description. I feel like the experience of miscarriage is so characterized. It's not about, you know, the literal, like, objective thing that's going on. It's about the mourning of the thing that could have been. And if you've got twins and one of them has vanished, and you're mourning a life you could have had. And that, on an emotional level, is, you know, it doesn't matter what the definition is. If you were expecting one thing and another thing happened, and that's quite a large thing to change, that, you know, in a more, like, less precise medical sense, that feels like a miscarriage to me.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it kind of is a miscarriage then. I don't think it's always necessarily thought of as a miscarriage, you know?
Especially, you still get a baby.
You still, yeah, you know, I mean, there's still a positive element to it. I mean, from what I've seen, people could be obviously very upset about this, which makes complete sense, but I don't think that's always necessarily the case, you know, because, again, as you said, there's still a child coming out of it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like one twin eats the other.
You still become a parent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Your life is changed, but marginally compared to the change of a miscarriage with no viable
thesis. Feeling of going through all that pain and then getting nothing at the end.
Yeah, and that's not to sort of, belittle the sort of difficulty that people would go through with vanishing twin syndrome. That's just to say that it is different in the outcome often.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you do, because vanishing twin syndrome could result in issues for the mother, or, you know, the parent and the remaining sort of fetus, if it happens in the second or third trimester. But if that happens, generally, the doctor that is working with you will just keep an eye on you, and you've got to be monitored more closely because there could be other complications. And in fact, the vanishing of said twin could be due to other factors.
That's what I was going
to
ask you, actually, is the vanishing of the twin in the later stages, is that actually, is the act of vanishing or whatever has happened to the twin is going to cause trouble for the other baby? Or is it that a fetus vanishing at such a late stage is potentially indicative of other issues that are going to also affect the other twin?
I think both.
You think both? Okay.
I think... both. Yeah, I'm going to be honest, I researched this a little while ago, so answering that question off the top of my head, I think both. Yeah.
Cool.
So the causes of this, well, actually, first let's talk about how they sort of, what the signs are and how they sort of diagnose it, and then we can get into the causes. So how do you think they sort of diagnosed vanishing twin syndrome? Like, how do you think they, I've kind of already hinted at it.
Ultrasound. Yeah. One's gone.
Yeah.
You see two and then you don't see two anymore.
Exactly.
So they do literally vanish. It's not that one fetus stops growing and then you have to pass it. It's that they've vanished.
I think in some cases you might have to pass it. But
that's what I was wondering, is that vanishing twin syndrome, it maybe is a misnomer, because unless they literally always, it's only applied to literal vanishing.
Well,
I think
when I say I think that sometimes a one can die and you'd have to pass that, then yes, I think that does happen. But I don't think that falls under vanishing twin syndrome, right? Because vanishing twin syndrome is the situation wherein one of them, sort of a multi-fetus pregnancy turns into a loses at least one of the fetuses, you know, and reduces to... you know, maybe a single fetus pregnancy or another multi-fetus pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So, that's how they diagnose it. Yeah, with ultrasound. And it's interesting though, because it means that it's a relatively new thing that we know about, right? Vanishing twin syndrome is something that, of course, we could have known about it for a while, but it would have been harder to explicitly show it because you can't look inside unless you, you know, chop them open. Or I guess go in from... Never mind. So ultrasound's made it a lot easier to sort of diagnose this. The most common sort of sign of it when trying to diagnose is vaginal bleeding or spotting, cramps or pelvic pain, which is basically the same as any other miscarriage. So as I've said, usually this happens when the mother is over 30, 35 years old. So when that happens, I mean, realistically, when you're looking at pregnancies at that age, they tend to there tends to be slightly more complications. So there is slightly more monitoring with that as well. And if you've obviously conceived through sort of assisted reproductive techniques, then they're obviously going to monitor you for that as well, because usually the reason you've done that is because you've had issues with conception, and then further complications can then happen, all of that sort of stuff. But yeah, I mean, the main way of diagnosing is literally just looking at an ultrasound and just seeing what's going on. So what do you think causes vanishing twin syndrome?
Well, there's obviously the first one that I mentioned, which I know is one specific case.
So
where
that's not so much a cause. That's
oh, outcome. Right.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm talking what would cause the twin to vanish. As in, what would... not like where does it go, but why does it do that?
Why does it disappear?
Why does it do the thing I talked about yeah. being absorbed by the other fetus?
Yeah.
I have no idea. Proximity? Like it's too close? There isn't something dividing them?
We actually don't know.
Ooh.
We actually don't know the exact cause of why vanishing twin syndrome happens. But there are risk factors. So obviously chromosomal abnormalities, the mother being 30, like over 30. Basically, from what I can
30?
See.
30?
Yeah. Over 30, over 35. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
I mean, obviously, it increases over the age of 30.
Yeah, yeah.
It depends. It also increases over the age of 35. It depends where you want to slice that. But from what I can gather, it seems to be that ultimately, if you're at higher risk for miscarriage, then if you have a sort of twin pregnancy, then there's a slightly there'd be a higher risk of sort of miscarrying one.
Yeah.
But then it disappears basically due to how bodies work, which we'll get into in a sec. But other risk factors are. As I said, reproductive techniques or assisted reproductive techniques, it says increased incidence of multiple gestations. So basically like more fetuses growing inside of you, a small placenta or other anatomical abnormalities of the placenta that may be associated with early twin loss. So in that case, like if the placenta is, I think, abnormally small, then... Obviously, that means that there's less flow of nutrients and whatnot to the twins, which means there's less it needs to be shared, which means that if one of them has fewer resources than the other one, then they're less likely to survive. There's also genetic factors, and then also factors that happen just in the womb as the fetus is growing. But what they found is that the abnormalities that cause vanishing twin syndrome, that cause one of the fetuses to disappear, they're usually there from the start. Rather than sort of something that happens during pregnancy. So it's less likely for something to happen during pregnancy, which then causes one of the fetuses to sort of disappear. Usually it's something that is present from the very beginning. And so this is where we get to what happens to the vanishing twins. So there are a number of different things that could happen. So the first one is resorption, which is kind of what you were talking about. So resorption can basically be absorbed into the other sort of the other fetus, or into sort of basically be broken down back into the mother's body, sort of thing. You know, and it's very weird and interesting, right? Like, it doesn't seem like it should make sense. Like, one living thing should be able to just absorb another. But
they're just collecting cells.
It's just some cells, yeah.
At some points.
So resorption can happen as early as 7 weeks or as late as 12 weeks into the pregnancy. Obviously, when I say resorption, I don't want you picturing a full fetus that's like they're basically ready to pop.
Yeah.
Just being absorbed back into the uterus or being merged into the other twin. Like, this is stuff that generally happens sort of early in the pregnancy. And also, if the sort of gestational sac just resorbs, that it usually happens without affecting the other twin, which is why if a vanishing twin happens early in the pregnancy, then it's the other twin is like more likely to be fine, because, you know, it just doesn't really affect them. There's no harm done to them, and also there's no issue with resources or anything like that. But yeah, there's just always really, there's generally just really, really good chances of survival of the other twin when the fetus is resorbed.
Can I just check it? The resorbs is happening. It's not being resorbed back into the mother. It's being resorbed into the other fetus.
Both can happen.
Both can happen. Okay,
yeah, both fine. Can happen. Yeah. It doesn't really, what I'm reading here, it doesn't really differentiate, but both are certainly possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, that can actually also happen in non-twin pregnancies. You know, so if you actually look up resorption uterus on Google, you basically find out about fetal resorption, which doesn't necessarily need to
go into another baby.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then there's also blighted ovum, which is basically a problem with inside the gestational sac. The fetus, the embryo cannot be sort of seen. So it would kind of, it would appear to be sort of a vanishing fetus.
Yeah.
But actually, it turns out that it was just a pregnancy without an embryo, essentially. So you have the gestational sac,
yeah.
But there isn't a viable
right.
embryo there.
Wow.
And so it would appear, because you could see the gestational sac on ultrasound, remember,
yeah.
between 4.5 to 5 weeks.
Yeah.
So if you do a 5 week scan and you can see a gestational sac, you're like, okay, there's two gestational sacs, two fetuses. But then you look later and actually it turns out that one of them just wasn't sort of viable. Mm.
But there was an embryo in there at some point. It hasn't just like another gestational sac has appeared. I don't know what all these things are necessarily, but a gestational sac has formed around an embryo which then did not carry on growing.
No, so the gestational sac doesn't need to form around,
or the gestational sac has just formed and there never was a second embryo.
Yeah, so it's the second one.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Why does it form then?
Not really sure, to be honest. I mean, I think.
But that doesn't happen in, like, when there isn't a twin. People don't just get a gestational sac out of nowhere, do they?
I think you Maybe. Can. I mean, we spoke about. I mean, we spoke about hysterical pregnancies.
Yeah.
Gosh, was that 2 weeks ago? 3 weeks ago? A couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
So I think we spoke a little bit about this then. I don't think we would have used the terms gestational sac and gestational sac and whatnot. But yeah, no, like you. I think that would, if that were to happen without another twin, that would probably just be a hysterical pregnancy.
Right.
Or a phantom pregnancy, rather.
Yes. Right?
Whereas in this case, this is what's interesting about the sort of vanishing twin syndrome when I was looking into it. It really seems to be, here are just the normal problems that happen with pregnancy sometimes.
But with twins.
But with twins, and it only affects one.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Okay.
So that's what I mean. Sorry, I researched this. A while ago. Yeah. So I'm reminding myself as I'm going through my notes. Also, I hit my head a while ago and I'm concussed.
Now someone else hit your head.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
That wasn't your fault.
I totally forgot. Wow.
You're very accusatory language.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It wasn't my fault. So there's also fetus papyraceus. Fetus papyraceus. That's how it is. Papyraceus.
Yeah.
Papyraceous. And this one is wild. It's kind of like a mummified fetus that's squashed or whatever, that's associated with the other viable fetus. It's incredibly, incredibly rare. Like it's not common at all. But essentially, one fetus flattens the other against sort of between the membranes and the uterine wall. So it just gets kind of squashed. And it usually happens very, very early in the second trimester. Like the other fetus is just sort of killed by the viable fetus. And this is the one that's most like murder, I think, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's one accidentally, like one fetus just full on like,
baby,
you know,
slaughter.
I'm pro-choice and it's my choice to abort you, brother. Just blimey. Squashing them up against the wall. Because this happens quite early, it could result in complete resorption, but... it could like affect the other twin potentially, because it might not be resorbed properly and then it could become complications with both of the twins. And what's interesting about this one is that you can see it on ultrasound, obviously, right? Because
the other sac is squashed up against the
wall.
Yeah,
you can physically see what is going on in ultrasound. So apparently also a vanishing twin could also be linked to a number of fetal malformations in the surviving twin, but they don't know exactly how that works. So in this case, there could be issues with the surviving twin.
Yeah,
but they don't know how or why. And there's no, and just generally as we move on to treatment, there's no special treatment or care necessary when there's like when there's no complications, because again, a vanishing twin could just result in no complications. Like, you know, they essentially could be a miscarriage with a viable fetus still left over. But if you, like, as I said, if you've got sort of the vaginal pain and the bleeding and all of that sort of stuff, not the vaginal pain, the bleeding and the pelvic pain, then you'll be sort of monitored, and you know you'll get sort of medical care for that. But if a twin complicates a pregnancy during the second or third trimester, then that could then be like sort of marked as a high risk pregnancy, which are treated sort of quite differently. And then yeah, you just get, you, as I said before, you just get monitored a lot more closely. And as in terms of complications, like, it's tough because there are a lot of different ones, like cerebral palsy, and a sort of premature labor. A lot of other things can sort of happen, but vanishing twin syndrome is one of those things that is very annoying to talk about, sort of specifically, kind of like hysterical pregnancy, because it's not exactly one thing.
Yeah.
It's just an outcome.
It's the phenomenon of checking your ultrasound and one twin has vanished.
Exactly.
Loads of different causes.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like if we were to do an episode on diarrhea and I had to list out all of the potential causes of that. And
you love comparing things that are observed that have different causes to diarrhea.
Because it's a perfect example.
It's a perfect example and everyone understands it.
Very awkward sentences sometimes.
Absolutely, but I very much...
twins are like diarrhea. Or my favourite of your ones that you've said is, being gay is much like having diarrhea.
Yeah, being gay is a symptom causes. And not a disease.
Oh, God. It's just so uncomfortable to hear you say that.
Yes, but if you make a provocative analogy...
You get people's attention, and then you can educate them.
Well, yeah, but people will remember it, right? If you're thinking about this sort of thing, you think, oh yeah, diarrhea, boom, amazing.
Some people use provocative language in order to capture your attention so that they can gain for themselves. Corey does it to get your attention so he can educate you.
Yeah, for your benefit.
I do this for you.
Gays often have diarrhea because they have to douche.
Oh my God. Which is another cause for the symptom.
There you go. Yeah. Being gay could cause diarrhea.
I don't have a response to that.
Carry on.
Yeah, these are the kinds of things that usually that would just slip past. Like, we're talking about something like some deep metaphysical concept. Yeah.
I wonder if it is classed as diarrhea, because if I just shove a hose up my ass, that's not a cause for diarrhea.
Yeah.
Diarrhea is loose, watery, and possibly more frequent bowel movements.
I guess it is diarrhea.
So yeah, I suppose if you add water to any poo, it becomes diarrhea.
By that logic, then drinking so much water that you get diarrhea.
Do you get diarrhea from drinking lots of water?
Mm. Yeah, probably. Oh no, you pee a lot.
You pee a lot.
You drink a lot of water and then eat something that makes your body think, I need to get rid of all this quick. Because I think when I was taught about what diarrhea was, I don't know how we've gone from twins to diarrhea, but when I was taught about what diarrhea...
You made the segue.
No, I didn't. When I was taught about what diarrhea was, I was taught that, it is just your body deciding I may have been poisoned or something bad is happening. I need to get rid of the entire contents of the bowel just as quickly as possible.
Right.
So I think kind of in your small intestine, I think... Is the last one? I don't know. Basically, in your intestines, instead of like sort of sitting in there for a bit and all the water being drawn out, it just evacuates as quickly as possible.
Right.
So the water is not drawn out of the stool, so the stool is loose and watery.
Right.
Yeah. There you go.
So clever.
It's very clever. It's very, very, which is why diarrhea is so common. Because if you think about it, whenever your body is thinking, something is not right, it's just like, okay, good.
Get it out.
Because it's a good tactic. I mean, it's evolutionarily speaking, it's a fantastic tactic.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same way that vomiting is fantastic.
Yeah.
How good is vomiting? Honestly,
look, before we digest that, let's get it out.
Yeah, let's talk about vomiting for a second, because vomiting is wonderful, right? Like, think about it. You ingest something that is going to kill you.
Yeah.
And your body says, no, 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 no.
No, no, no.
It's out now.
It just pull the eject lever.
As soon as you start to feel like not okay,
yeah.
your body's like, because you ever thought
about the difference between vomiting and diarrhea is basically how long it takes the body to detect it.
Yeah, or what's triggering it? Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. Because you know, if you've got a stomach bug, your body's like, well, there's clearly something in here that it's some bad. So just shed
get rid
it.
Of all of it.
It's great. And what I think is really
it's a privileged position to be in.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Great. But some animals can't vomit. Like rats, for example, can't vomit, and so they need behaviorally be very different from us. Like we can be a little bit more blasé about what we eat. Whereas rats,
they're very like, they get in, they make sure, they're very specific about their food.
They take a tiny nibble,
yeah.
And they can be very, very picky because they, if they don't have a food, if you have sort of fancy rats, like pet rats, and you don't feed them a lot of different foods when they're younger, they are hesitant to try new foods when they're older because they'll just resort to eating safe foods because they know they're safe. Also, I'm pretty sure that they often have one rat that eats, that they have their sort of test food.
Oh no.
The king's food tester.
I think I've heard that. Where they've got a rat test, like a rat will test something.
Like the runt.
Wow.
And that's why rat poison needs to be slow acting.
Yeah.
That's definitely the bottom of the chain, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like ant poison. The ant poison is poison that doesn't kill the ant that eats it. It kills it when it gets back to the hive or the nest.
Yeah.
Right.
So clever.
Oh, it's fantastic, honestly. I mean, it's horrible.
Horrible.
But I mean, the biological mechanisms at play are just fantastic, I think. So back to the sort of vanishing twin syndrome. As I said, there are plenty of complications because ultimately, obviously, if it happens at a certain point, there are fewer complications. If it happens later, there are a lot more complications because, it's sharing space with the other fetus.
Mm. And it also might be symptomatic of a thing that will affect the other one.
Exactly. And there are a lot of different things that can cause vanishing twin syndrome, obviously. So there's going to be a lot of different kinds of complications, and realistically, if we're gonna talk about all the different kinds of complications, we need to talk about all the different things that can result in a vanishing twin syndrome. Mm. But I think honestly, if you think of it really as more akin to a miscarriage, but with more than one fetus present, right?
Right.
So you just miscarry one of the fetuses, which then obviously could result in complications later on. But often, you know, as I said, if it happens early, then there aren't going to be many complications. But another interesting outcome of this is chimeras. So you know what a chimera is?
Combination of two organisms.
Yeah, so a chimera, genetically speaking, so this is from Britannica, chimera in genetics, an organism or tissue that contains at least two different sets of DNA, most often originating from the fusion of many different zygotes, fertilized eggs. So in this case, you can have chimeras due to resorption. So if you've got fraternal twins and one of them absorbs the other twin, I say resorption, really it would be, I guess it'd be absorption in, in when it comes to the fetuses. But if one of them absorbs the other twin, then you can have a one organism with multiple sets of DNA in it, which is very interesting.
Why does that not result in the immune system attacking those parts of the body?
I don't know off the top of my head. One would assume because the immune system is trained on those, like
by exposure to all
by the exposure, yeah, because it's there from, I suppose, because your immune system is, you've got an innate immune system, but you've also got a sort of adaptive immune system. And I suppose if it's there from so early, like before birth, then the immune system doesn't recognize it as foreign.
Yeah,
I suppose that would be my assumption. Yeah, but that's a fantastic question. Yeah,
it's quite an easy thing to select for the immune system, because if you do that, everything you do it to will die.
Yeah.
And so the ones in which you don't do that are selected for.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I've got a couple stories here about chimeras. Luke, you were hinting at knowing one at some point.
Yeah. So I just have this vague memory of, I think, a TV show about identical twins, I think, or I think it might be about conjoined twins, actually. And basically there was something where if you have twins and one is absorbed by the other one during pregnancy, then it can sort of live on and sort of be sort of attached to you, but it's not a whole formed baby, but you can have, like, I don't know, even so much as like a face or something.
There was a teenager in India. So this was published in 2019. This is from Live Science or Live Science. There's a teenager in India who they found bones, teeth, and I quote, hairy, cheesy material in her abdomen.
Yes.
This is something called fetus in fetu, or like fetus in fetu, like fetus in situ.
Mm.
Essentially, what happened is it was a kind of vanishing twin situation, but she had absorbed the other twin, and it kind of grew inside of her. Mm-hmm. So essentially, gosh, it was her twin just growing there in her abdomen. She was 17 years old. The case study was published in August 2019, the 12th of August. But they did a CT scan on her, and they found that there was just this mass in her abdomen that they couldn't really explain. But there were multiple bones. It looked like vertebrae, ribs, and long bones. And apparently, this affects a 1 in 500,000 people worldwide. Which, wow. Can you figure out how many people that is?
About 14.
Yeah.
50, maybe 16 now.
Between 14 to 16 people.
Wow.
Mad, right? And it's very, very uncommon. But, you know, they could almost do a football team, right?
Yeah, that's true. The ratings of that would be amazing.
Right. But I mean,
easy marketing.
I suppose they'd look mostly normal.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Were there not people, like, I thought there was a girl who had like 8 limbs or something, where like some of the limbs were not genetically her limbs or something like that.
I mean, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of these cases. I've got another one for you just after this. But this one was really, 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 really interesting. But apparently 200 cases of fetus in fetu have been reported in the medical literature, but only 7 were in people ages 15 or older. They don't really know what causes it. It's kind of like parasitic twins. It's also technically would be a sort of vanishing twin syndrome, which is why I'm bringing it up here, because this is something that is almost always brought up when you talk about vanishing twin syndrome. Just, you know, the fact that you can absorb another twin and it can live on inside of you. But when they took out the mass, it was the size of a full-term baby. It's 14 by 16 inches. By 4 inches, so about 36 by 16 by 10 centimeters, and here's a quote, and was composed of a hairy cheese material, multiple teeth, and structures resembling limb buds.
Oh.
It also contained skin, hair, and fat tissue.
It was alive?
No.
It wasn't alive, okay.
No, it wasn't like a living baby.
Oh, I thought it had just carried on sort of growing.
No.
It was just part of her body, right?
Right.
Yeah, it was just part of, those all existed, but they were in her body, like in her abdomen.
But were the cells alive?
I mean... Yeah.
Okay.
But like, I as far as I'm aware, the cells were the cells were alive. So the cells are alive, but when they're not like alive, as part of their sort of own organism, it's like kind of a parasitic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. There's no problem with you asking the question.
Yeah.
It's just asking, is it alive? Is a very difficult question to answer, because. What does alive mean, man?
Yeah, well, it's just like, because like there's examples of like, I remember watching a documentary about a girl or two girls, depending on how you describe it, where they had like a pretty much standard body, but two heads.
Mm-hmm.
And they're two separate people with two separate brains, but they can kind of tell, as far as I remember, they can kind of tell what each other are looking at to a certain extent. And they share like a circulatory system, and they're two people. But obviously, neither one of them could survive without the entire body. And so, like, yeah, that's what I mean by was it alive? In that it was linked into the circulatory system. It was linked in. It was getting nutrients, all that kind of stuff. But it wasn't a thing of its own.
Yeah. So if it was, so in this case, if it wasn't alive, sorry, that's why I was just struggling to understand what you were asking. If it wasn't alive, it would probably be calcified.
Right.
Which is this really interesting. So, oh God, this is so cool how bodies work, man. If you have something like that in your body that is like harmful to it, your body can sort of calcify it, which is essentially just build stone
away.
Around it.
Yeah, yeah.
It just builds stone around like, and I say stone, I mean like it's minerals. So it's quite literally like stone around whatever it is. And you've just got a stony mass lump inside of you.
Yeah.
So no, this was actually, this fetus was not like that. It wasn't sort of calcified. It was actually connected into blood vessels. They actually had to leave some of the tissue in her because it was so... tightly connected to the blood vessels that they wouldn't be able to remove it without hurting her.
Yeah.
And this is problematic because apparently it could become cancerous, because it is I don't know if it was a genetically identical twin, but it is a twin. It is a sort of sibling, but it is kind of this it is just this tissue that isn't sort of supposed to be present in your body. It is a sort of mass. It could continue sort of growing on its own. You don't really know what's kind of going on with it. It could be a worry sort of thing, right? And that is that one, you know, with the 17-year-old girl in India. I'll do that again, sorry. And that is that one with the 17-year-old girl in India. But there is another one which is a much funnier story, which you might have heard about. It involves an unborn twin.
Inside the other twin.
Cucking.
We've talked about this.
Yeah, cucking a man.
What?
Cuckolding a man.
What is, so, well, I don't actually know.
Do you know what cuckolding is? No. Okay, so
we've talked about this.
Yeah, we have. Okay.
Cuckolding or this?
Cuckolding.
Okay.
I think both, actually.
Fantastic. So in this case, what happened was a man had a son, and they did a paternity test because, you know... they did a paternity test.
Is a cuck a man who lets another man sleep with their partner?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
In this case, they did a paternity test, and they only showed 10% of the kid's DNA.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking at it, the man was the kid's uncle.
Yeah.
But
so he had his brother's balls.
But this was crazy. Inside of his sort of testicles, there was some tissue from the absorbed twins, which then started producing sperm cells.
Brilliant.
It's ridiculous. I think there are some other parts of his body which also include the sort of the twin DNA, but it's incredibly, incredibly uncommon. And it's even more uncommon because it's germ cells, right? Yeah. It's your reproductive cells. So that's crazy. So like, how does that affect how you feel as a person? You made this kid.
Yeah.
Genetically speaking.
But it's your brother's balls.
It's not your kid, but you say it's your brother's, right? But your brother is you. Do you know what I mean? Your brother is not this hypothetical person.
You're both.
Yeah. How do you make sense of that? Because like all the parts of your body is designed to pass on your genes.
Mm.
And so it's there. It's like, I literally can't.
Jeez.
I can't do it. My genes are... not my genes.
So there's a mix. It's likely a mix. And also, I mean, it happens on his skin as well. Like the twin skin is slightly dark, it's slightly lighter than his, and his is slightly darker, I think. So he's kind of got a slight striping pattern on his skin. Ooh. It's this really interesting. It's just this really, really interesting case wherein, how do you feel? Because obviously the kid is your kid. If you've raised the kid and you made the kid, it's just that, you know, you were cucked by your unborn brother that you absorbed.
It's just very funny when you look at it genetically.
I mean, he gets the last laugh, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, genetically speaking, it's not, it's like, it's your nephew.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like you know what I mean? Like you made it. You did all the work, right? It's just that it's just so
weird
happens.
About it. You might feel weird about it and that would be justified.
You know, justifiable feeling weird, but you've done all of the work to make the same amount of work that you do to make the kid. It's just that the cells that you've grown in your body are... some of them are slightly different from most of the other cells in your body.
Yeah.
Which is...
it's the same. It's a similar experience to having... to like being an adopted parent. It's like... do you know what I mean?
I mean, I guess, yeah. But I mean, it's that one... It's so much less removed from being a biological parent. Because in this case, you've done... There's nothing that you've done that is remotely different. It's not even like, you know, it is still technically your DNA. It is just not most of your, same DNA as most of the rest of your body.
The parts of your body that are creating the motivational forces to look after this child as opposed to any other child are doing it in order to propagate their own DNA.
Yeah.
And they can't. It's such an interesting thing where like life is made for this one purpose and a different thing is happening. And obviously on a human level it doesn't matter, but on a genetic level it's weird. Yeah. And also, but also kind of wonderful that this fetus that didn't make it to being a person, nevertheless achieved the thing that being a person is about, which is making another person.
Oh my god, you're so right.
It just jumped a generation.
I think it brings up questions of identity. So not just identity, but ownership of body, because we are sitting here talking about, oh, this is not... like we see DNA as being the defining characteristic of a person. This person has multiple sets of DNA in him. And what we're doing is saying, oh, but that's his unborn twin's DNA, as though it isn't his.
Because we're identified with our DNA. Yeah.
But it's so odd to me because, I mean, then the next step from that is obviously we see our sort of gut biota, the, the microorganisms that exist in our gut that are almost necessary to our survival, and also have effects on how we survive.
Yeah.
We see all of that as being very, very separate from us. And like,
it's in a relationship with my gut biome.
Aww.
It's not me. We're friends.
Yeah.
We're friends and we help each other out.
True. But then it's one step closer, and it's very clear that the defining line is the way that we differentiate is DNA. Mm.
Yeah.
Like, what is me is DNA, even though, you know, it doesn't make sense to do that, to draw that distinction when you've not known for your entire life that you have had DNA in you that it is not yours. And why is it not yours? You grew it, you know? You have supported it through your whole life.
Yeah.
It's not like your brother ever existed.
Yeah. But if it's if your DNA is speaking, when your DNA says me,
yeah,
it means itself. Because your DNA is saying me through the medium of you, because your DNA made you.
Yeah, but your DNA isn't saying me. Do you know what I mean?
But it is, because you are an expression of your DNA. So anything you express is an expression,
in part,
DNA.
Of your DNA, and then there's also all of the other factors that affect.
Yeah, yeah, no,
you know, I just think it's really interesting for drawing out this weird little thing that humans have, wherein we think that we are we because of the DNA. But it's just, I don't know. I think it's interesting the way that they talk about it being, it's his brother's child, it's his brother's DNA inside of him, it's not his tissue, it's his brother's tissue,
he produced it.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know, I feel like if I got a heart transplant, it'd be my heart. It's mine. It's my heart.
Your new heart.
I paid for it, I took it from that small child, and I kept it by
Do you have any siblings? Yes, I have a brother, he lives in my scrotum.
That's a worrying. It's a very worrying response. Well, I had a brother, but now he lives in my scrotum.
No, that's left, he always lived in your scrotum.
Yeah. Well, no, at one point he lived in the womb with
me. Oh yeah, next to you, and then you absorbed him and placed him in your scrotum.
Yeah, so I used to have this guy living next door to me, but he was a real pain in the balls, and that's where he is now. Yeah.
Now he is a literal pain in my balls.
How does that work?
Well, I think that is probably about it for the Vanishing Twin Syndrome episode. I do just have to ask a quick question for you.
Oh, yeah?
You ready for a quick fire quiz?
I forgot.
Dun, dun, dun. Magician edition.
What?
Because Vanishing Twin.
That's so...
Bringing it back to the top.
Tenuous link. If we ever do anything about the science of magic, you're
going
to
be stuck. Well, we don't know the cause. It could be tiny little fetus magicians still.
Damn, it's not wrong.
Okay. I thought you were a scientist. Okay.
No, it could be.
Okay.
I'm not saying it is.
Okay.
It probably isn't, but it could be.
Okay.
So
I'll remind you of that reasoning next time I say anything vaguely dubious.
Oh, so you don't like it when I use it back on you? So.
Not when you don't let me use it.
So the rules of the quickfire quiz have not changed. I will ask one question. That is one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finish asking the question wins. What do they win, Jam?
Nothing. Like the... No. Twins who are left over.
Don't do it. Oh, dear. Oh,
they win life.
Oh, they get a whole... Yeah, they get a whole life, I guess.
Sometimes.
Well, the winner of this quickfire quiz can have a whole life.
Luke, what is your buzzer?
Ooh.
Champ, what is your buzzer?
Is the pause at the beginning?
No, just the... Oh, okay. You just cut the pause out.
That's okay. A very weird buzzer, Champ. But okay.
My buzzer is...
So my question for you both is...
If you buzz that, you won't be allowed to...
In pregnancies with three or more gestational sacs, what percentage results in vanishing twins?
Is the pause at the
beginning? Luke? Yeah?
I paused throughout the question, Champ.
but that's part of your buzzer, so you answered before. You buzzed in before the question was done.
Oh my gosh. Okay, who wants to answer this?
Ooh.
Luke, you can answer it.
32%.
No.
Oof, Champ.
36%.
No. No, no, no. Three or more gestational sacs. Champ.
20%.
Ooh, 35%.
50%. Jesus Christ. Okay, you both lose that. 40%. Yeah, 50%. So the numbers here are so for pregnancies that have three or more gestational sacs, that's 50%. For twin pregnancies, it's 36%. And for assisted reproductive technique test pregnancies, that's 20 to 30%.
Wow, we are bad.
Yeah, very bad. But that is not all. We need to thank all of our new patrons. And if you would like to be thanked at the end of next month's episode, you could join our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys at any tier and be thanked at the end of the next Patreon vote episode. So first to thank is Sophie Freyer.
Thank you.
Thank you to Harper Fair.
Thank you, JD.
Thank you, Chase Windsor.
Thank you to Rowan.
Thank you, Alicia Sisson.
Thank you, Levi Licinius Paliorus.
What a great name.
That's a fantastic name.
Yeah, that's a spell.
Thank you too, Lizzie J.
Thank you, Ashley Wawan.
Thank you, Charlotte Nilsson.
Thank you too, Emily Aykroyd.
Thank you, Julie Brown.
Thank you, Jordy Heracles.
And thank you too, Sarah Asher.
Legends.
Oh, fantastic.
All of you, legends.
A little round of applause for these patrons, I think. Well, thank you very much. As I said, there's plenty over on our Patreon. You can get little bonus clips. You can get bonus episodes. You can get our brand new show. I keep calling it a brand new show, but it's been going for a good few months now. Sci Guys After Dark, which is a lot like this, but a lot more philosophical. Yeah. All of the other things.
It's basically our rambly chats off episode. We just decided to film them. We made it a podcast. It's great.
I feel rambly chats is doing it a disservice. I think we come into the episode with like a thing we want to talk about, and then we go on a meandering discussion, and at the end we sum it all up as this is the overarching theme or thing we've learned or thing we talked about in that episode. It's really good fun.
I undersold it.
It's like Joe Rogan, but good.
Yeah.
So before we go, we would like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producer Rosa Rodriguez and Danito. And thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys or find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and here on YouTube and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCore everywhere.
You can follow me at Champion everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Oh, bye.
Time for you to leave.
To vanish.